You are now going to take a listening test. This test will be divided into two parts. While you are listening, do better if you concentrate on the lecture without taking notes. You will hear each portion of the lecture. Then you will hear a series of questions based on the portion of the lecture you have heard. You will record the answers to the questions on the answer sheet you have in your hand. The answer to each question will be A, B, or C. Choose what you think is the correct answer and mark that choice on the answer sheet opposite the number of the question. You will hear the question and the choices only once. You will not have time between questions to go back and change your mind. Think carefully and rapidly about the choice you want to make, mark it on the answer sheet, and then do not go back and change it. The first portion of the lecture deals with a dispute between Mr. Foley and Mr. and Mrs. Arlow. Part 1. Joseph Foley owned a farm in Connecticut. Mrs. Arlow and her husband owned the farm adjoining. The boundary line between these farms was not fenced throughout. By consent of the parties, the Arlows were responsible for the portion of the boundary nearest the highway.
And so that is the way I begin to make a living from writing. I tell you all these things because I gather that many of you here are English students or writing students and maybe people who want to know how you can, what you can do with writing to really make it pay a little bit. I have never been a bestseller. I've never had a book of the month. I've never had a book on the bestseller list. I'm not a wealthy writer. I haven't had the good fortune of Frank Yerby or Richard Wright or Willard Motley to have a knock on any door that sold 100,000 copies. But nevertheless, I have managed to live from poetry, from prose, from stories, and from reading my poems. Now, in conclusion, perhaps I should read you again two or three of the older of my poems that have been anthologized a great many times and that perhaps many of you have read or heard. Some of them have been set to music. The one that I'm going to read you now, The Negro Speaks of Rivers, for example, has had several musical settings. One by Howard Swanson that perhaps you've heard Marian Anderson sing. Another by Margaret Bond that you may have heard Adam Moulton or Muriel Ron or Todd Duncan sing. And this poem, I promised to tell you how I write a poem. I perhaps by indirection explained it already, but I can tell you exactly how I happened to write this particular poem. It was written just after I'd graduated from high school. It's one of my very old poems. And my father had sent for me to come to Mexico to spend a year with him. And then he was going to send me to college. So I got on the train in Cleveland, went down to St. Louis and changed trains to go on down to the Texas border into Mexico. And the train that I was on went across the Mississippi River just at sunset time. So I found myself looking out the window of the train at this great muddy river flowing down toward the heart of the South. And for the first time, I really began to think about what the Mississippi meant historically to the Negro people. How to be sold down that river in slavery time was one of the worst things that could happen, to be sold into the rice fields, the cane fields of the deep South. And then I remembered having read that Abraham Lincoln had gone down the Mississippi on a raft as a young man, and that he'd seen slavery at its worst in the deep South. For the first time in his life, he saw the slave markets in New Orleans. He never forgot these human beings being bought and sold so brutally and without care for what happened to them. And as we all know, many years later, it was Lincoln who signed the Emancipation Proclamation. And somehow, in my own mind, this river began to link itself with rivers in our ancestral past, with the Congo and the Niger and the Nile in Africa. And so as the train went on into the night, I took out my father's letter, which was in my pocket here, and wrote down on the back of this of his envelope this poem, just about as I'll read it to you now. The Negro speaks of rivers. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. Well, in closing, I'll read you just two other very short poems. This one is called I Too Sing America. Written a long time ago, too, but I think it's still quite valid in what it says today. I Too Sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat strong and grow well. Tomorrow, I'll sit at the table when company comes. Nobody will dare say to me, eat in the kitchen then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I, too, am America. And my feeling is that increasingly the contributions of the Negro people to America, the beauty that they have given our country, is being recognized and appreciated, and the Negro people themselves are more and more being assimilated into the national life of our country. But in some parts of our country, as we all know, not anywhere nearly fast enough for the pace of the times and for the pace of the way things are happening all around the world to colonial peoples and peoples who've hitherto been oppressed. Some of the colonial peoples that are achieving their freedom in Africa and Asia have more freedom than some of our own American, in quotes, citizens in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. And so I think we need to move a little faster in some areas of our race relations in this country. But nevertheless, I think we can all look forward with the kind of optimism to tomorrow that I try to express in this final poem, a poem called Tomorrow. We have tomorrow bright before us like a flame. Yesterday, a night gone thing, a sundown name. And dawn today, broad arch above the road we came. We march, Americans together, we march.